Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Saleri Report. Today is March 23rd, recording for publication on March 24th. I would note, I didn't tell you this, John, March 22nd is Saleri's anniversary. So,
happy anniversary.
I know, another year in business. Our theme today is currency wars, inflation, and interest rates, because everywhere you turn, there's a war over who controls the capital markets and whether or not they can use the capital markets to control the world. So the money wars are definitely on us this year.
Yeah, and in a lot of ways, it seems more and more like the U.S. is at war with itself.
Right.
Right. And we'll see that right off the bat in these stories.
Right. Okay, well, let's just dive in. We got a lot to cover.
Yeah, we do. Okay, so let me get spreadsheet up and let me cut over to the first story. This is from The Hill. Senators seek to freeze Russian gold reserves.
You know, when I first saw this story, I thought it was a joke. I didn't believe that an American senator really thought that they could control 190 countries, whether or not they transacted in gold with someone.
Yeah, like, okay, so let's take a step back and set the table for this by saying, you know, the U.S. froze or deleted or whatever, otherwise disabled Russian reserves. The U.S. Central Bank did that, right?
Right.
And that's a very dangerous thing. It sets a very bad precedent because it announces to the, you know, all that money is a creature of law, right?
Right.
There are statutes that determine the disposition and how that money is arranged and everything else. There's nothing in the statute that says, hey, you can willy-nilly just turn off people's reserves whenever you feel like it.
Right.
So by doing that, what the Federal Reserve has announced to the world is that we don't have the rule of law. We have the rule of the Fed, which is just going to do whatever it wants on a whim. And that's the backdrop to this next story about freezing gold reserves, which drives the insanity. It turns the insanity up to 11. The story doesn't – let's just get into the story. It's crazy. Senators seek to freeze Russian gold reserves, okay? A bipartisan, of course it's bipartisan, a bipartisan group of senators offered legislation on Tuesday to freeze Russia's gold reserves. And I want to – which direction is the arrow pointing? Russia's massive gold supply is one of the few remaining assets that Putin can use to keep his country's economy from falling even further. Americans would also be subject to sanctions if they sold gold physically or electronically to Russia. Russia holds $130 billion in gold reserves. It's now buying gold to offset the devaluation of the ruble and then selling that gold on the international markets in exchange for high-value currency. By implementing secondary sanctions, the senator said they would aim to deter purchase of Russian gold and thereby, you know, make life very difficult for Russia.
Right. Right. One of the things we saw, we'll talk about it in a second, is they're trying to force a default on the Russian bonds. Russia was able to make their payments.
Right.
But if they've been acquiring gold or significantly increasing their gold reserves steadily since 2005. And as they have been doing that, they've been maintaining one of the lowest debt ratios in the world on their outstanding sovereign debt. So they're in a very strong position, but they can use their gold to get other currencies if they need other currencies. And that, of course, is what they're trying to do. But can you imagine the United States telling all the countries in the world you can't transact gold with another country because we said so?
Yeah, the criminality and the insanity is just out on the table for everybody to see.
Right, right.
It's just a big, gigantic, you know, 200-pound spoiled brat. It's crazy.
Well, but you know what we're watching as the financial transaction control grid. You know, so let me step back. I wrote State of Our Currencies, then you wrote Going Direct Reset. Now we have the new CBDC out. And what we're showing is a transition in the global financial system from a market-based system to a transaction control system. And whether it's Trudeau grabbing the, you know, or dictating money in the banks, or now senators saying you can't transact gold with so-and-so, what we're watching is this slow and steady implementation of that control grid. And people are beginning to realize, oh, these guys are serious and it's really this bad. Because it ends all freedom. It ends all liberty. It ends all, and it ends all economic optimization. It's just total control.
That's exactly right. It is all premised on there is no rule of law.
Right.
The control grid is up to us. It's just a whim. We do whatever we want.
Right. Right. It's not the rule of the mob. Right.
Yes. It's a criminocracy, or I call it the mafiocracy.
Right.
It's seeing it right out in the open now. And, you know, I'm putting out a video right now that talks about, you know, you mentioned Russia having low debt to GDP. U.S., it's not so low, is it? It's about 130%, and it's rising. And you have indications from people, Jay Powell, Janet Yellen, are saying, hey, the debt's unsustainable. They're setting us up for the loss of world reserve currency.
One thing I notice is the Russians have about $637 billion of reserves, of which, if you look at the dollars sort of captured by the sanctions, it's about half, I think. And as I was reading about the, trying to figure out the details of what they were really doing, you know, one of the things I wondered is if the dollar system just needed the money. I mean, are you just stealing it because you need it?
I doubt that, because the Federal Reserve can create money at the flick of a pen.
I understand. So you would think they wouldn't, but I also think that if you look at the you know, if you look at the difficulties within the Western system, you know, the reason they're locking everybody down is because they don't have the resources for them to continue their way of life. So I think there's a real squeeze on resources, real resources here. Because remember, Russia is rich in real resources.
True.
Right.
True. Speaking of Russia, let's continue with war in Ukraine. Next story. Boy, Swiss intake of Ukrainian refugees could be the largest in decades. And this is really interesting. There's a kind of a debate. There's uncertainty about how many people we're talking about. Cantonal authorities tasked with dealing the new arrivals from Ukraine expect as many as 300,000 refugees to reach Switzerland by the end of the year. Okay, 300,000. There are 200 Ukrainian students studying in Switzerland at present, and that number could rise to 20,000 in the coming months. The number of schoolchildren in some cantons could rise by 5 to 10%. That's according to the president of German-speaking teachers' union. So there's quite a bit of uncertainty. You know, 300,000 people and only 20,000 students. That sounds off to me.
Yeah. Well, there was one report that said that they were expected to take in 400,000. And we've seen reports that as many as 3 million Ukrainians have moved out of Ukraine during this period. So it's whatever the influx west is, it's very significant. But to give you a sense of the population, this is 5% of the Swiss population. Imagine if 5%, if your town grew by 5% and all those 5% were refugees from the Ukraine. So for Switzerland to up its population by 5%, all from refugees in this short a period, is an extraordinary event.
Yeah, that's going to inflict some degree of trauma on someone.
Right. Yeah. Right.
It is an extraordinary event, regardless of the numbers. It's a lot of people.
Right. And not as many as Poland. Poland has over 1 million refugees at this point, apparently.
Wow.
Right.
Wow. Right. So it's serious what's going on over there.
Very serious. And many indications this week that we need to prepare for this to go on for a long time. This is going to be a very long, serious event.
Yeah, and we've said that from the outset. This is not going to be resolved quickly.
Nope.
You know, the U.S.'s own history abroad, you know, how many times did we get out quickly? Never.
Right.
Korea.
Right. There was one indication, you know, Saker's been trying to track the details of what's going on the ground. He indicated that you have approximately 10,000 Russian soldiers dead, and that's more deaths than they experienced in Afghanistan.
Yeah.
When they were there. So, and I think the wounded is approaching, it's not near 20,000, but it's over 15,000 and headed towards 20,000. So in a country with really, you know, demographics going the wrong way, this is painful. This is painful. Yeah. And, you know, if it's hard to, I haven't seen any good statistics on the deaths of the Ukraine, but the people are experiencing, you know, they're experiencing food shortages, they're experiencing all sorts of bombing and shelling. It's a horrible experience. And when 3 million people leave their country, that's an indication of how much suffering you're seeing.
Yeah, right. It's huge. Okay.
Keep going.
Keep
it's
it
so
going.
So cheerful. I want more.
On the war. The next story is just, there's a bit of humor in it. Russia seems to have averted its historic bond default for now, warns the, I guess this is CNBC. Yeah. Okay. Russia finance minister said Friday that the London branch of paying agent Citi had received $117 million in total payments. $117 million. That's not that much money for a big country.
Right.
You know, please. And so it's like, what's going on here? And the Kremlin spokesperson Peskov said Thursday that any default would have been purely artificial because Russia had the funds necessary to fulfill its external obligations. Okay. And that's a good point. It's like, well, you froze our money. So don't freeze our money on the one hand and tell us we defaulted on the other hand. That's just nonsense. And then, so you go, okay, at the bottom of the story, this is the humorous part. Okay, this is interesting too. JP Morgan Chase, the biggest bank in the US by assets, had been asked by Russia's central bank to process the $117 million coupon payments it had on its sovereign bonds. The payment was transferred to paying agent in Citi in London following consultation with the US Treasury Department. So everybody's on board here. JP Morgan Chase, Citigroup, City of London, everybody's cool, you know, getting this payment through, no problem. And so then they're like, what's going on here? So CNBC reaches out to the Treasury and the banks. And so you see here, a spokesperson for the Treasury declined to comment when contacted by CNBC, and so did JP Morgan Chase and Citi also refused to comment. So it's like, yeah, we know the story doesn't make any sense. We don't have any comment. we can't, we're not going to confirm that Peskov is right.
Right.
This is just a silly story. Anyway.
Well, if there are two things that are going on. You saw a lot of scuttlebutt all week long implying that Russia was going to default, Russia was going to default, Russia was going to default. At the same time, the U.S. is borrowing money to pay the interest on its debt when interest rates are rising. So if you look at the fundamentals of who's in danger of defaulting, if they can't print their own, you know, which they can. You know, if you look at the U.S. debt squeeze, they're in a debt squeeze. Now, what they're doing, because the U.S. dollar is going up and is high, is they're putting everybody in the emerging markets in a debt trap. Because if you have debt, if you're China and you have debt dollar denominated in dollars, then you've got to earn dollars or you've got to borrow dollars to pay your debt. And so if the U.S. dollar goes up, when the economy is going down, then those countries get thrown into a debt trap. And we've seen that before. So,
yeah.
I mean, it's very interesting. It's projective identification. You're accusing another guy of the trap, you know, that you're either putting on people or that you're in yourself. So, I mean, the whole debt story has got more disinformation and projective identification going on than any other story. That's why I wanted to focus on it this week.
Yeah. That's a good point. Countries can't really, if they're printing their own currency, they can't default.
Yeah. If I'm borrowing in something I can print off my computer, it's not.
Right.
There's no danger of default. Right.
Right.
There's a little danger of inflation.
that's where the U.S. is.
Right. Right?
That's where the U.S. is right now. And my video is in large part about that. The only way you can default really is you borrow in a foreign currency. That's tried and true way number one. Tried and true way number two is you lose a war.
Right.
It's kind of a good way to lose your currency.
Right.
Well, you just get conquered.
Right.
Okay. Let's go to our first video clip. This is of Assad in Syria talking, and I've got the volume. It's kind of muted on this, so it'll be difficult to hear. But it's the subtitles that matter anyway. So let's just cut over to this and see what Assad has to say.
وأثبت الغرب أنه لا يوجد لدينا أصدقاء ولا يوجد لديه أعداء، يوجد لديه عدو واحد هو كل من يقف في وجه مصالحه المادية. فيعني لا الشيوعية ولا الإسلام ولا النازية ولا الصين ولا روسيا ولا غيرها هم أعداء للغرب. إذا كانوا يلبوا المصالح فهم أصدقاء، إذا كانوا يقفوا ضد المصالح فهم أعداء، يعني المبادئ صفر. لكن آخر حقيقة وهي من أشد الحقائق قبحا وقل من الناس تعرف عنها، هي كذبة أن الغرب ضد النازية وأن الصهيونية ضد النازية. القلة تعرف بأن النازيين في أوكرانيا، وهي منظمات نازية عملت بشكل وثيق مع هتلر أمنيا وعسكريا وعقائديا، عندما انتهت الحرب العالمية الثانية أخرج القادة، البعض منهم إلى أوروبا والبعض منهم إلى أمريكا. وفي الخمسينيات طالبت CIA الإدارة الأمريكية أن يرفع الحظر عن هذه المجموعات النازية لأنها ضرورة لأمريكا في أوكرانيا التي كان جزء من الاتحاد السوفيتي. وما يؤكد هذا الكلام اليوم، هذا الكلام التاريخي، أن زيلينسكي هو صهيوني يهودي ولكنه يدعم المنظمات القومية المتطرفة التي قاتلت في الحرب العالمية الثانية عندما دخل هتلر، وشارك جزء منها في المذابح ضد اليهود. فكيف يكون هذا الصهيوني اليهودي داعم لهذه المنظمات؟ والغرب يدعم هذه المنظمات التي تسمى اليوم منظمة أزوف اليمينية، وإسرائيل الصهيونية التي تجتر ذكرى البكاء على ضحايا المحرقة، تدعم زعيما يدعم النازية التي قتلت اليهود. هذا يؤكد بأن الغرب يكذب في كل ما يقول، والغرب لا يهمه سوى أن يسيطر على العالم، أن يتحكم بالعالم، وأن ينهب الموارد ويملأ خزائنه بالأموال.
Yeah, there you have it. U.S. He does a good job of painting the U.S. as unprincipled, and Israel too.
Well, you know, it's inconceivable to me that a video like this would have been made and run even 5 years ago. And it's almost as though there's a complete breakthrough to realize we're dealing with a force that really has no ideology.
Right. Except acquisition.
Right.
You know, like Pac-Man.
It's like a tapeworm.
Yeah.
Right.
It's like Pac-Man. They're just more and more gobbling
somebody,
up.
Somebody sent out a telegram, a picture of John Kerry, Nancy Pelosi, Biden, and I forget who the fourth one was, another official, and said, you know, isn't it interesting that they all have children working in the Ukrainian gas industry?
Yeah, I saw that. It is. It's like, yeah, what?
Yeah.
It is curious.
You tell the kids to go pick up the kickbacks. What can I tell you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway. Okay, let's keep it going. Next story. Russia to build $10 billion nuclear sites in Iran. Let's zoom in. I'm just going to pronounce this Rosatom because it has the word atom and it's about energy. Rosatom, Russia's largest energy corporation, has a $10 billion agreement with Iran's Atomic Energy Agency to develop Tehran's Bashar nuclear project, according to Russian and Iranian documentation. On Tuesday, Russia and the Biden government, curious, announced that the revised nuclear accord contains carve-outs that will lift sanctions against both nations, allowing Russia to fulfill its obligations. So the U.S. is backing off here. We, of course, would normally not sanction Russia's participation in nuclear projects that are part of resuming a full implementation of the JCPOA, the accord with Iran, State Department spokesman Ned Price said. The relaxation of these penalties will supply a crucial stream of money from Moscow's Rosatom enterprise. The concessions to Moscow have enraged Republicans on Capitol Hill. I can imagine that they did.
Right. Well, what it shows you is that if you look at the money flows, the story gets much more complicated when you get into the details of what's going on. One of the reasons I wanted to focus on this is I think Iran and this the Iranian agreement is more important in this than we might think. If the Saudis and the Iranians continue, despite their disagreements with each other, continue to support Russia, as does China, there is the potential, given that cluster, I think, for the southern nations, both Latin America and Africa, to take a much more interesting, you know, they've always been, the U.S. has always been able to divide and conquer them. And the question is now, can they start to form a nexus that will cluster around splitting the capital markets into basically two different universes, one around Russia and China and the BRIC nations, and one around the traditional G7? You know, because the South is a big, silent player here. And if enough of them come in, and I just see you've got China, India, Iran, now Russia, and if the South comes in behind them, this could get very interesting. So what will the South do?
Yeah, I don't know. I get the feeling reading that story, and like, there's a lot of moving parts in this story, and I'm not seeing a whole like subblock of them.
Well, the question marks this week about energy, we'll see as we get to the later stories. You know, you want to know what is the truth about what's going on in energy, because we clearly don't know it, and nothing makes any sense.
Right. But there's energy. Yeah. There's just all this tumult in energy. And it's like, is that what Ukraine is really about?
So Germany's shutting down their nuclear plants, but the United States is facilitating Russia helping Iran build nuclear plants. What?
Right.
What?
Right. We're going to turn your money off, but we'll help you build a nuclear power plant. How about that?
Right. Right.
Okay. All right. Next story. CERN particle smasher to turn back on.
Okay. So Europe is cutting off Russian oil and gas. But they're going to turn on the single most energy expensive facility they have.
And the second one, too. We'll get to that.
I don't know what to say. You know, the one of the things I've often asked is, are we bringing out a financial transaction control grid because we're going to implement breakthrough energy and we want complete control because there are real risk issues with breakthrough energy? You know, and the more I look at the energy stories this week, that's the question I'm asking. Is this just, you know, with breakthrough energy, they don't need Russian oil and gas. They can turn on CERN. They can have cryptocurrency out the wazoo. It doesn't make any sense.
And we'll get to that. Yeah, it doesn't. But let's pop back into the story. Let's just see what they say here. The collider will be turned back on in March. And a few weeks later, start smashing subatomic particles again at nearly double its previous power, helping scientists hunt for clues about the universe. So you're really doing this to find out about the universe? The world's biggest particle collider, located near Geneva, has been undergoing a 2-year refit, and work is now in full swing to start circulating proton beams again in March.
So, wow, and China's building an even bigger one. I don't know where it stands.
Yeah, okay. So on that note, let's turn to our next energy story. This one, I understand, this one makes some superficial sense to me. This is out of England. IOG, mm-hmm. That's just a company in England. IOG, First Saturn Banks Gas. I think this is the first story you and I have ever done where banks doesn't refer to financial banks. First Saturn Banks Gas, BP gas sale agreement in place. Here we go. UK oil and gas firm IOG has confirmed first gas from phase one of its Saturn Banks project in a new gas sales arrangement with BP. They say they've got two wells, Blythe, the first well, and Elgood is planning to start up in the next 2 days. Blythe has already started up March 13th. The entire Saturn Banks offshore system, including the platforms, pipelines, associated subsea equipment, and production wells, will be normally unmanned with remote operation from the control room at Bacton Terminal. And the guy says, the president of IOG says, my sincere thanks also go to our joint venture partner, Cal Energy Resources, and their owner, Berkshire Hathaway Energy. So Warren Buffett makes a cameo appearance in this story. That's from Andrew Hockney, that quote, the CEO of IOG. And he says, as the actually another guy woman Fiona says, as the UK transitions to net zero, it will need a stable and secure supply of domestic gas to reduce its reliance on imports. And there you get to the part of the story I get. It's like, okay, that's about England buffeting its own energy.
So right after Germany, right after Nord 2, the certification is stopped, and Germany loses, you know, a big potential supply of gas, you know, and this is after, you know, so we have Brexit, then we bust Nord 2, and then suddenly, magically, the Brits announce they have a huge new supply of domestic gas. What a remarkable coincidence. And the sales agreement is in place with BP, which is the company that Sir John Sawyer is on the board of, who was smirking and smiling at the announcement that, you know, that Putin had invaded. The one with the rat story.
The European Union guy.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, Sir John Sawyer was the head of MI6.
Oxford Union. I misspoke.
Right, at Oxford Union. But he was the one who was bragging about, you know, getting Putin to attack like the rat who was being cornered.
Right.
And he's
right.
smiling the whole time, knowing that they're just about to announce, you know, they have more gas than God.
Yeah. And we have another story coming up where it's like, well, which side is England on here? You know,
England's side.
Right. What are these guys up to anyway?
They have many tricks in their pocket.
They do.
And I said weeks ago, Britain and the Commonwealth are going to come out on top on this one.
Yes.
Watch.
I do remember that.
And okay.
I remember feeling somewhat skeptical. Now,
are you feeling less skeptical?
Feeling a little less skeptical, I must say. anyway, next story. This is really a story. This is James Corbett. Shocking document reveals Trudeau's real plan. Let me zoom in. UN-led Agenda 2030 to remodel the world order and lead us into the maws of the fourth industrial revolution and the great reset in the name of sustainable development. And I think he says, yeah, China and Russia are on board here.
Yeah, he goes through all the sustainable development goals of the UN and shows how, you know, who Trudeau has pledged allegiance and Putin and Xi Jinping have pledged allegiance. You know, and the question is, did they, you know, were they... Sometimes global leaders will just, you know, say, oh, yes, we're in blah, 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 but it doesn't have real teeth.
Yeah.
And the question is, you know, are they really on board or not? And the answer is, I don't know. But, you know, what James is trying to point out is beware thinking any of these guys are our friends.
And I think that's fair. I mean, in the video just did, which by the way, is called Your Federal Reserve Prescription is ready for pickup. I'm kind of debating about that title, but I say, you know, what's going on is world reserve currency is shifting hands. It's just the financial parasite is still in control. It's just changing its countries.
Right.
Right. China and Russia.
Right. I have real questions about who's really in control of, you know, if you look at who's in control of the U.S. federal treasury and the budget and the, I mean, if you look at who really controls the dollar system, it's invisible.
Yep.
Right. You know,
it's difficult to figure out.
Right. Well, you've taken so much of the budget and the money secret.
Right.
And if you look at the pattern that the reserve or the weaponry and the covert operations that have been behind protecting the dollar, you know, you're talking about a big infrastructure and a lot of it is black.
There's a lot of opacity.
Right.
Yeah. You just don't know. Right. Okay. Space, military, global turf wars, next story. Let's hit it. This is kind of funny.
This is like the one we got from Syria. This is another example of the governmental infrastructure being really blunt about what they think of the West. So sorry, go ahead.
The gloves are off in this one.
The gloves are
off.
Right.
Here we go. Spokesperson of the Chinese mission to the EU speaks on a question concerning NATO's leader's remarks on China. NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg said yesterday that China had an obligation as a member of the UN Security Council to actually support and uphold international law and join the rest of the world condemning Russia's invasion. What is your comment? And here we see the Russian comment, or the Chinese comment. We will never forget who bombed our embassy in the Federal Republic of Yugoslavia. We need no lecture on justice from the abuser of international law. As a Cold War remnant and the world's largest military alliance, NATO continues to expand its geographical scope and range of operations. What kind of role has it played in world peace and stability? NATO needs to have good reflection. Wow.
Right. I mean, it's funny because the Chinese have traditionally been very, very careful. But they are, you know, what we've seen, their different comments during this last 6 weeks, it's almost like their frustration has reached a boiling point. And they're tired of pretending, you know, that they're dealing with anything that has an ideology or law.
Yeah, well, we saw a story a few weeks back where the Chinese minister stood up in a meeting and said, hey, who are you to lecture us?
Right.
You know, they're tired of being talked down to. Don't talk down to us.
Right.
You know, so, but it's like the gloves are really coming off across the world. Okay.
Well, you know, if you look at what it takes to run a huge trading operation as any nation, you know, I don't care if you're India, I don't care if you're China, even if you're Iran, you just have to get things done. You have to, you know, put things on the truck and ship them out within a certain timeliness. And trying to deal with partners where words have no meaning and contracts have no meaning, and they don't keep the, you know, they don't follow the laws and they change the laws. You know, it's we used to call it a crazy maker. In other words, you can't do business with a crazy maker. And at some point you just can't, you know, you have
to walk away.
Right.
Yeah. You have to assume no business at all.
Right.
It's not possible.
Right. They're not agreement capable.
Right.
So Lavrov was right. Okay. Let's keep going.
Last story in space military global turf wars. This is behind a paywall from the Financial Times, so we can only really talk about the headline, but the headline's enough. Finland warns of major escalation risk in Europe amid NATO membership debate. What do you make of that?
So the United States and NATO have been working very hard behind the scenes for years to get Finland and Sweden to join NATO. And right before Russia invaded, they put out a warning to Finland that basically said, don't you dare. Now, what the Financial Times story is indicating is that the Finnish Poles, for the first time, are starting to support joining NATO. And you have both prime ministers, both presidents saying, you know, this, you know, trying to join NATO right now would be a dangerous thing to do and a dangerous escalation. So any politician in those countries know the last thing you want to do is it's like pouring gasoline on the flames.
Yeah.
I mean, Finland is right there on the Russian border. The last thing they need is a war with Russia. If Finland or Sweden were to go into NATO, then suddenly, you know, we're back to moving the missiles closer and closer to the Russian border. And that the reason I wanted to cover this story, John, was what it shows you is the people pushing for this have absolutely no boundaries.
Right.
They're doing everything they can to blow this up into World War III.
Right. Yeah, that's the direction they're headed.
Right.
And I'm convinced that the reason is what you said earlier, the U.S. is borrowing basically to make its interest payment. It's ball game monetarily for the U.S., and it's just like an all-out crazy, you know, they're lashing out in all directions to prevent that, the dollar from sinking and loss of the world reserve currency, to maintain control.
Well, they're going to start, you know, they are looking to start a nuclear war. So
they're looking to just do everything possible to maintain control, whether it's QE, do whatever we need to do, continue the looting operation, then you're ripping off the United States as much as we can until the bitter end, because we're getting at the bitter end. We're on the cusp right now.
So
you're borrowing to make an interest payment. That's it. It's over.
Here's the thing. It's over. I just don't know how fast or slow the over. You know, if you look at the history of losing reserve currency status, you know, I told you, we talked about it yesterday, that it took after they created the Fed, then you had World War One, and then you had a duopoly between the pound and the dollar. But it took until World War Two for the pound sterling to really lose the reserve currency status.
Yeah, I didn't know that. So, and in fact, in my video, I give you credit for that. I'm like, I didn't know that. I tried to look it up on the internet. I'm like, what is Powell talking about? I said, Dr. Catherine Austin Fitch, she filled me in. I'm like, holy cow, I never knew that. That dual reserve currency between World War One and World War Two.
Right.
And Powell talks about that in testimony before Congress, which I discuss, where he's clearly saying it's possible, you know, with all everything that's going on, it's possible to have two world reserve currencies.
Yeah.
And I'm like, holy shit, the Federal Reserve Chairman just said what?
Right. Well, he's describing what we're watching, which is a split in the capital markets.
Yep.
I mean,
he
we're
sure
watching
is.
A powerful Asian capital market come up and it's separating.
Yeah.
And it looks to me like the Brits are doing everything in their power to make that happen.
On that note, let's go to the next.
Yeah,
it's really
they're ready
the
for a duopoly again. Okay.
The next, okay, keeping in mind, to set the table here, your comment, we're borrowing to make the interest payment. We cannot longer afford increased interest rates, okay?
Right.
U.S. can't, we can't afford it. Okay, forget
right.
it. So let's go to the next story. Wall Street Journal. Fed raises interest rates for first time since 2018. This is all optics, okay? The Fed will raise its benchmark federal funds rate by a quarter percentage point to a range between 0.25% and 0.5%, the first rate increase since 2018. And that's really the sum total of the story. I went on Fred, St. Louis Federal Reserve website, and looked. The federal funds, it's 0.33% now, up
right.
from 0.08%. Okay, that's story number one. Now let's cut to story number two from the BOE, and see what it's doing. Okay. Bank of England raises key interest rate to tackle inflation. The British Central Bank boosts its key rate to 0.75%. And the key thing here to keep in mind, the Fed just raises interest rate once. The Bank of England, by contrast, has raised its key interest rate for the third time since December last year, as it pushes ahead faster than other central banks in tackling a global wave of inflation caused by soaring energy prices. No, what England is doing is it is pushing the U.S. to follow. It's pushing the U.S. over the waterfall.
Right. Well, it was yesterday, the day before Powell came out and implied, well, we may raise it another 50 basis points.
They can jawbone all they want.
Right.
The bottom line, you go on the Fred website and you look it up. You know, I don't care what they say they will do. I discount what they say
right.
by 98% and 2 tons of salt. You know.
Right. But if you look at market rates, they are going up. We'll look at it when we get to the charts. Now mortgage rates in the United States are over 4%. So
you got it.
There you go.
Wall Street Journal, mortgage rates top 4% for first time since 2019. Okay. The average rate for a 30-year fixed mortgage topped 4% for the first time since May of 2019. At the beginning of the year, the average rate on America's most popular home loan was 3.22%. So it's up over 0.75 percentage point. Mortgage rates are closely tied to the yield on the 10-year U.S. Treasury, which tends to rise in tandem with the Fed's benchmark rate. So there you see.
Right.
You know,
the cost of money is going up.
It is. But the Fed, you know, it's not really this time. It's not really coming from the Fed.
It's interesting that I read a very good piece on the Ukraine by Tom Lugano last night, the Guns, Gold, and Goats guy. Is it Guns, Goats, Gold, something like that?
Yeah, yeah.
And one of the things he pointed out is that Powell has been dragging his feet on CBDC compared to his European counterparts.
Yeah.
And what's interesting is we see Switzerland pushing and the Bank of England pushing and Powell dragging his feet.
Right.
Right.
Powell is most certainly dragging his feet because Powell has said he's on record with David Rubenstein from last year saying the U.S. debt, the fiscal path is unsustainable.
Right.
Of course he's dragging his feet.
Right.
Yeah. And for the reason you say that we're borrowing to make the interest payment, basically. Not literally make the interest payment, but to make the payments on the things you can't really negotiate.
Right.
You can't really cut. You can't not make that interest payment. Likewise, you can't not pay people Social Security without creating huge problems, right. Medicare, Medicaid, and all that. You have to make those payments, or you're going to have there's going to be blood in the streets. And the capital markets know that.
Right.
Wow.
But you wonder what their plan is for the next 12 months.
I don't think, I think the Fed is at the point now, it's like this, you know, live to fight another day.
Right.
That's kind of what it's looking like.
Which is not a good sign.
That's not a good sign. That's the craziness is live to fight another day.
Right.
I'm convinced of that. All right. Next story in Fed Watch, and this is part of the crazy, the cutbacks on the First Amendment. You know, Tucker Carlson and Tulsi Gabbard in the next story. Here you go.
This is frightening. Tulsi Gabbard warned about the importance of making provision for the biowarfare labs in the middle of a war, and that things can go wrong, and this is very dangerous. Now, she has significant experience in the military, and I think she's still in the reserves. So this is a woman with military experience warning about a military situation. And Tucker Carlson had her on the show, at which point you had a wave of criticism of both Carlson and Gabbard, which was to say that it was irresponsible is off the charts. It was threatening them with criminal prosecution and treason, which is, you know, punishable by death. And I mean, you know, the whole thing was over the top. And I have to give Carlson credit. He comes out and just says, you know, he points out how absurd, you know, the whole dialogue is, but it shows you how the shriekometer is turned onto.
Here's what it's turned up to. I got a graphic for it. There you go.
Right. Yeah. This is really the Salem witch trials. Yeah. That's exactly what it is.
Huh.
You know, and it makes as much sense. And it's about as lawful. I don't know if you, one of the things that got the Salem witch trial, I spent a lot of time studying the Salem witch trial long ago.
Really?
And one of the things that got it going, it's very fascinating, was that Cotton Mather agreed to accept spectral evidence. So if you're accused of being a witch and I say that your ghost was in my bedroom on Saturday night and forced me to kill my husband, you have to prove that your ghost was not in my bedroom on Saturday night. How are you going to do that?
Wow.
Yeah. So one of the tactics that you run with, you know, the neocons are very good at is spectral evidence, you know, and you're constantly having to prove that something didn't happen. That didn't happen. How are you going to prove it didn't happen? You weren't there. You weren't associated, but you got to prove. Right. So you're constantly fighting with spectral evidence.
Yeah, you're either with us or against us.
Right. And one of the things that concerns me, we've watched different people in the Congress try and get this domestic terrorism meme going, and it has completely failed and fizzled out every time. But they haven't given up, and they're coming back around to do it. And this time they're desperate. So remember, if you've stolen $21 trillion and mucked up the reserve currency, you know, the best thing you can do is attack the victim. And that's what they're trying to do. So beware of that. If you're in the United States, just beware that these guys are desperate for people to attack.
Right, because eventually, you know, if the U.S. fails, you know, the scorecard is going to have to be sorted out.
So I'm going to disagree with you. I think the U.S. has failed.
Okay. And a lot, I've been on record saying the U.S. has lost the rule of law a while back.
Right.
So to me, that's a material failure.
Yeah. So I think that material failure. Now, what they haven't lost yet is the Constitution. And I told you last week, I spent Monday calling and emailing Tennessee because the Judiciary Committee in Tennessee in the Senate is now on this Tuesday was holding a hearing on proposals for a vote for a CONCON, which is insane. So we haven't lost the Constitution yet. If you get a constitutional convention, that's going to be the end.
But you have lost, if you've lost the rule of law, what you've lost with respect to the Constitution is its superiority over people, over the crazies, right? It's still there, but in essence, it boils down to what George Bush said about it, which is just a goddamn piece of paper, right? That's his phraseology.
Well, the crazies are out of control, and nobody, you know, in the past, there have been different factions or groups that have been able to rein them in, particularly in the military, quietly rein them in. And right now, the question is there anybody left to rein the crazies in? And I don't know that there is.
Boy, I don't either. Anyway, let's keep it going with FedWatch and see what the next story is. What you think about this? Plains drought to curb U.S. wheat harvest, adding to global supply worries. This is not good.
No, this is very bad.
A worsening drought in the southern U.S. plains is threatening the region's winter wheat crop, just as the Russian invasion of Ukraine dents global supplies. Some farmers in southwestern Kansas, the top U.S. wheat-producing state, have not received much measurable rain or snow since October. Winter wheat is expected in autumn, lays dormant in winter, and begins sending up green shoots in spring. More than half of Kansas was classified as under severe drought or worse as of March 8th, the driest conditions since 2018. That's a bad scenario there.
Right, and I keep pounding the drum with the food series on the importance of making sure you have a local food supply. And I'm just going to keep pounding this drum because there's more and more stories coming on the food supply that just continue to make me nervous both about the potential for shortages and deterioration in quality.
Yep, and on that note is our next story. FDA approves GMO cattle for food. Boy, this is bizarre. The FDA has determined that meat from cattle bioengineered to have shorter hair, known as slick coat, poses a low risk to consumers who eat it. So there is a risk to consumers, they're acknowledging. This is the first time that the FDA has made a low risk determination in a bioengineered animal for food use. Cattle with slick coat tend to do better in warmer climates. In the case of the bioengineered cattle, the genes were altered using CRISPR technology by precision breeding from a selagen. That just all sounds like I don't want that in my food. What are you doing?
I don't want that in my food. here's the problem. At this point, we've proven beyond a shadow of a doubt the FDA is not, you can't trust them for anything.
Right.
So we've got a zero integrity organization approving GMO cattle. I have no idea what the facts are, what it really means. I just keep telling you that the regulatory capture is significant and the food supply is not safe.
What that means to me,
right,
is that there's less food on the shelf that I trust.
Right.
That's what that means.
Right.
Because I don't trust any of these people.
Right.
You're not going to jab my arm with something with undisclosed substances by criminal enterprises and that same food companies. No. Bioengineered food, you're out of your mind.
I have to tell you, I interviewed on Tuesday Jennifer Walters, who's going to be the host for a new series. And this interview is announcing our new series, the Celeria Health series. And a lot of the content is about helping you navigate dealing with the medical system. She's a registered nurse and has just incredible experience. But I got her to tell several stories of how she had her epiphany about how you got to take care of your own health and really be your own leader and in the system. And she described in nursing school, she was trained to give vaccinations. And you're trained as a nurse, she said, if a vaccine vial should drop and break, you have to call somebody with a hazmat suit because it has mercury in it. And she said, why did I think if it's something that if you break, it requires a hazmat suit, it's safe to inject into a baby's body.
Right.
What was that? Anyway, you realize.
Yeah, keeping in mind that it's diluted once it's dropped. And you still need the guy with but it's concentrated when it goes into this tiny, precious little baby.
Right.
That's an awful you know, realization.
Right. It's a multiple personality disorder world we live in.
It is. We live in a lot of denial.
Yeah, GMO cattle is safe and effective. Right.
A lot of cognitive dissonance going on here.
Okay, keep going.
We have only one CBDC story this week, crypto and CBDC, and here it is. It's kind of significant.
There's so much energy. The European Union is swimming in energy. We have no problem. We have no problem doing Bitcoin mining in Europe. Plenty of energy.
EU votes against banning proof of work. Okay? So the European Union Parliament Committee voted against banning mining and the use of proof of work, which is used by Bitcoin. Proof of work has been criticized for being energy intensive and harmful to the environment. According to Cambridge Electricity, Bitcoin Electricity Consumption Index, Bitcoin mining consumes 133.65 terawatts of power every year. Wow! Which is more than the total amount of power consumed by many small countries. The vote is a relief to the crypto community, as the ban would have been seen as a de facto Bitcoin ban.
Jeepers. So You have to. So we have enough energy for canceling European or Russian gas. We have enough energy to smash particles to understand the universe. We have enough energy for crypto, but we don't have enough energy for people.
Yeah, right. I want to go back since we only have one crypto story this week. I want to go back to the story a second time there's a second little part of the story that I think is worth looking at. Okay. They have this measurement here called liveliness. Liveliness is a quantitative measure. It increases as long-term holders of cryptocurrencies liquidate positions and decreases while they accumulate. A reading between 0 and 1 is used as a measure of liveliness. You will notice that there was a large spike in early February, but that can be attributed to the $3.6 billion that was seized by the U.S. Justice Department that was linked to the 2016 hack of Bitfinex. And so you can see that the big spike down there in February.
Yeah.
That's what's going on. But I found it interesting that the Justice Department can, by itself, by $3.6 billion seizure, move the index that much and freak people out. Because people, I think it exploded a lot of myths about, you can't get to, it's secret, it's called crypto, right? It's invisible to the government. Nah, it's not so invisible, is it?
So my understanding is the IRS has announced a big hire of auditors, and it sounds to me like they're going to go after crypto. So
yeah.
I would just warn everybody. We have a very good special report on, if you're in the United States, taxes and cryptocurrency. You might want to check it out.
Right. They will go after it as capital gain, true?
Yeah, the important thing to understand is a lot of crypto traders I know do a lot of swapping and don't necessarily realize that those swaps are taxable transactions.
Right. It's like selling a piano to buy a violin and whatever.
Right.
You've got to book those gains and losses.
Right.
And I don't think they're doing that. They're saying, it's like money. It's like changing dimes for quarters. It's like, that's not what it is.
Well, the first time I encountered this, I was at a Bitcoin conference in 2017, and there was a tax symposium, so I went to listen to the tax. And I can't tell you how many of the people there announced they don't have to pay their taxes because it's secret.
Yeah.
I was like, uh-oh, no, that's not how it works.
Boy, that's a bad misperception. But anyway, that's our story of the week from CBDC and crypto. Amazingly, usually we have a slew of stories. But anyway, the next category, Farmageddon, and we bat lead off here with a friend of Soleri, Mark Skidmore, who was on Greg Hunter's show, USA Watchdog, of FDA, CDC lying about vax deaths and injuries, according to Mark Skidmore. I'm not going to play the video. It's an hour long.
So Mark gave a detailed presentation. He did his first one on his new survey, which he surveyed 3,000 random sample of Americans, and based on their reports of their experience with both COVID and the COVID injections, and the experience of the people they know, he estimates that as of December, 300,000 Americans have been killed by the injection and another 1.1 million seriously injured. And that's significant because in my mind, that's 1.4 million families approximately probably bankrupted. I mean, the stories are, the financial ramifications of these kinds of injuries are absolutely horrible in terms of both what it costs you in terms of lost income, but then what it costs you in terms of medical expenses and the need for care. Anyway, so he went over the survey at the Doctors for Symposium Ethics, COVID Ethics Symposium, and then we had him on the Saleri Report. He just did this big one in USA Watchdog, and it's a great one to send around to family and friends. You know, one of the indications we have is it's the third booster that's really doing damage. And of course, we're watching the pharmaceutical companies and the regulators out promoting third and fourth boosters. And if you're trying to talk somebody out of a third or fourth booster, this will really help.
Okay, so the third booster, you don't mean the third shot. You
mean
the fifth, the third shot.
So right. So is that the second or the third booster? I don't know. It's the third and fourth shot.
It depends. If it's Pfizer, it would be the third shot, the first booster. Anyway,
right.
I think it's
right. Anyway. And they're now promoting the second booster.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
So yeah. I don't know. You know, a lot there was a real falling off when people who had taken the first two shots realized that it was a treadmill. They got irritated and said no. And so it has become progressively easier for family and friends to talk people out of taking that third or fourth shot. The thing that concerns me, I have reports of a real push by the EU regulators this summer to come down and once again try and mandate vaccinations.
Boy.
And so I expect another fight this summer here in Europe.
Yeah. That I would, yeah. Again, it's live the fight another day. All bets are off now.
Right? Well, what's remarkable, John, is how many people have died or have been seriously injured, and yet it doesn't seem to have gotten through. You know, the trance is not broken yet.
No, because it's not on TV. It's not on Facebook.
Right, right.
So, all right, and continuing on with Farmageddon, next story. From Real Science, 779 athlete cardiac arrests, serious issues, 500 dead after COVID shot. Let me zoom in here. So-called health professionals running the COVID vaccine programs around the world keep repeating that the vaccine's safe and effective. It's just normal. Everything's fine. In response to their pronouncement, here is a non-exhaustive and continuously growing list of many young athletes who had major medical issues in 2021, 2022 after receiving one or more COVID vaccines. Well, the International Olympic Committee is going to give us some backdrop here, some data to frame a reference. Studied documents from international data banks from 1966 to 2004. Those documents indicate 1,101 sudden deaths in athletes under 35 years of age, an average of 29 athletes per year. So that's normal to see 29 athletes per year, but you know, under 35 just dropping dead. I didn't know that. 29 per year. So let's look at this graph that they have there. I'm just going to scroll on down. Here you go. Athletes in collapse deaths, 20 to 21, 2022. Here you see these are by month. Okay. So in January of this year, it's 123.
More than the whole year average.
Yeah.
Right.
It's so in a month, you're getting almost five times as much as you get in a whole year, right?
Right.
And so in December, it was 118, 106. You get the point. It goes from 29 per month toward over 100 per year. A massive increase. And yet we're told a vaccine is safe and effective.
No, I just can't imagine how many, if you look at the tragedy this represents to a family, it's just extraordinary to me.
Yeah. I guess to round this out, what else is there that has changed materially before 2021 than vaccines? What else could be causing all of these deaths, sudden deaths, and athletes under 35? If it's not the vaccines, what is it? And that's a question you never see answered, and you're never going to see answered, in my opinion.
I can't think of anything that it would be other than, you know, something in the spring. It's the only thing I can think of. Remember, you know, the Gates Foundation has been working on vaccinating people through spring. So I would just point that out.
Yeah.
Right. Aerosol vaccination.
Okay. Next story in Farmageddon. This is from Maine. Maine traffic fatalities. What happened?
So, you know, I wanted to cover this because I want to warn people, John. It's very important in this environment to drive defensively. Skidmore keeps bringing up the traffic fatality statistics. He's really put me onto this. But we keep seeing rises in traffic fatalities. And what it tells me is whether it's the injections or the stress, there is a real problem. And you need to be much more careful about driving defensively and make sure everybody in your family is. This is serious. Anyway, go ahead.
Okay. I just clicked out of something. I hope I didn't cut the feed.
I can see it.
You can still see the story. Okay, let me zoom in just to round this out. So 32 people have died on Maine's roadways, according to the Bureau of Highway Safety. Maine saw an 85.7 jump in fatalities in January 2022 compared to the previous January, and a 27% increase February. So not that big in February, but massive in January. Officials said many of this year's fatal crashes were caused by unsafe speeds, reckless and impaired driving, and lack of using safety restraints. So people didn't have the seatbelt on.
But you know, interestingly enough, heavy metals poisoning can cause impulse control problems.
Really?
Yeah. And one of the things that happens with injections is you get heavy metals poisoning. So,
no kidding.
Yeah. So, who knows what is causing this, but I know that this jump in fatalities is real. And everybody in the family needs to sit down and talk and think soberly about, okay, how am I going to do much better defensive driving? Because there's a problem out there and it's dangerous.
The thing I see in interstate driving is the packs of people. You'll see a cluster of 10, 12, 20 cars all together, bumper to bumper. I stay a mile away from that.
Right.
Well, right. Anyway, I drive very, very defensively.
Right.
Okay. Next, sir, let's get into pushback. Happier times and pushback. Okay. This is from Matt Taibbi. John Podoretz, you suck. Pretty direct there. And here's what Matt has to say. Reagan speechwriter and one-time Jeopardy champ, John Podoretz, penned a triumphant column the other day titled Neoconservatism, a Vindication. And he says the key foes, he meaning Podoretz, the key foes of the neoconservatives face when it comes to the moral frame of deterrence, the idea that America is and should be a force for good, are no longer hip liberals, but rather traditional conservatives who have taken their place as the leading anti-American voices of our time. Taibbi says, anti-American, let the sheer balls of that sink in. Gotta love Taibbi.
So go back to, I just want to show you one of the things he says. He says, Podoretz and the rest of the overgrown risk-playing lunatics in his neocon treehouse. Wolfowitz, Abrams, Pearl, Crystal. Okay, these people are absolutely dangerous lunatics. They have destroyed America.
Right.
They have destroyed America. And Taibbi absolutely nails them to the wall in this piece. It's a beautiful, beautiful piece. He does a great job.
Yeah.
Big kudos to him.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
The next pushback piece is from another funny guy, Russell Brand. This is a video
Very
clip.
Very funny. I'm just gonna, Russell roll Brand, this. He does some of the best rants in the world.
Lukewarm on Russell Brand. This one I laughed really hard watching this. Yeah. This is great. Okay.
Let's get into some bloody news, shall we? The World Health Organization will meet with member states and reps from vaccine certification credentials groups to discuss a global vaccine certification system. Over the last 2 years, vaccine passports have become compulsory for international travel in some countries. However, different regions and countries have different standards when it comes to proof of vaccination, meaning a passport that is verifiable in one country might not be verifiable in the other. So we need some help. Is someone going to step in? Is some centralized, non-elected, dubiously funded body going to step in and save us? The World Health Organization wants to get involved.
Oh, thank you.
Get involved in pulling it all together under a global system. Who among you doesn't like a global system? Who watching this isn't praying for the day where we can have one centralized government dominated by billionaires and their funds and their foundations? Yeah, then we can get all the guidance we need from the WEF, the IMF, the WHO. Just in case you don't recognize English sarcasm, that was it then. The WHO says he wants to create a trust framework. We're going to give you a trust framework. And once we got you in the trust framework, you'll have to trust whatever the fuck we tell you.
Why are so many bars on this trust framework? Can I open that door?
Not without your digital ID, you don't.
It's okay. We've embedded it in your hand. Beep. For trust. Beep, beep. Why is the door not opening?
We don't trust you. Which will allow the verification of a vaccine passport anywhere in the world.
Oh, good. So you'll never be free.
That is just his nerdy American accent. It's just, it's unbelievable.
Right, right, right. I just have to show this because, you know, the print subscribers should have gotten it. You should have gotten your copy. But here's our, we took Corey Lynn's whole thing on vaccine passports and the ID passports and put it in a hard copy and have published it. And the PDF is up on the website too. Anyway, and you can get more at the store, but she does a great job of just showing you the detail on how horrible this whole thing is.
Oh, that's great. That's nice. Nice to have that in a printed volume. So I look forward to getting that. Okay. Next story and pushback. This is from, I believe it's Mississippi. This is Mississippi Today. Senate passes anti-vaccine mandate bill. I like this one. The Senate, after much debate and efforts to make the measure stronger, passed a House bill to prohibit private companies and Mississippi governments from requiring COVID-19 vaccination of employees over their sincerely held religious objections. You scroll down and you find out Senator Chris McDaniel offered an amendment to provide such a broad exemption from any vaccine requirement, not just COVID-19. But a point of order was raised in that provision was scotched, but that's what they meant when they said, you know, this went through banning the COVID-19 vaccine,
right.
But the original, it was proposed to have it even broader than that. You know, good for Mississippi, right?
Yeah, the good old boys in Mississippi know enough to kill this.
Yeah. Okay, now, we've got three stories in diluting the brand. The first story is going to be the press corps with Jen Psaki. And it's going to wind up with Ryan Grimm asking a sensible question. But the warmongering among the reporters beforehand is not to be believed. I've
like
trimmed
these are
this
reporters,
down.
They're arms trafficking lobbyists.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah.
And the original video here was about 3 minutes and 44 seconds. I've lopped off about 2 minutes of reporters going, hey, why aren't we just bombing, you know, why aren't we go getting them and shooting them dead? You know, what's our problem, basically? So, but I've included maybe 45 seconds to a minute of it, but let's just roll this clip. This is incredible.
Our ambassador to Ukraine, Maria Ivanovich, has been quite outspoken recently, and she said we need to mitigate risk, but it's also true that not taking greater action comes with a risk as well, because Putin is a bully, and he only understands strength. Is the president showing enough strength against Putin? Putin were to use chemical weapons, would it change the president's thinking when it comes to these MiGs, taking the no-fly zone off the table, but at least on this issue? Are you prepared? Can you give us any more details about what that threat means of severe consequences? The president obviously made the same threat last week. Is that purely economic consequences, or would there potentially be a military threat?
Go ahead.
So aside from the request for weapons, President Zelensky has also requested that the U.S. be more involved in negotiations toward a peaceful resolution to the war. What is the U.S. doing to push those negotiations forward?
Well, one of the steps we've taken, a significant one, is to be the largest provider of military and humanitarian and economic assistance in the world to put them in a greater position of strength as they go into these negotiations. We also engage and talk to the Ukrainians on a daily basis, And the president and this national security team has rallied the world in being unified in their opposition to the actions of President Putin. So those are the steps we're taking. We also engage oftentimes before and after any conversations that any of these global leaders are having with both Russians and Ukrainians and encourage them to make sure they're engaging with Ukrainians directly.
Would Zelensky be empowered by the United States to reach an agreement with Russia and have U.S. sanctions released as a result?
Well, he's the leader of Ukraine, so he's empowered to have a negotiation with Russia, and we're here to support those efforts. Again, I'm not going to get ahead of a negotiation, but we are here to support those efforts. We discuss and have conversations with him, with his team on a daily basis.
Okay, that's just amazing. You know, there's so many reporters saying, you know, we need to bomb them, we need to get these MiGs. And finally, you had the voice of reason at the end there from Ryan Grimm of The Intercept.
We'll have the link in the headlines. I would just go watch it. Our movie this week is The Lord of Wars, The Lord of Wars with Nicolas Cage. It's about a Ukrainian arms trafficker and the arms trafficking business, and it ends with a statement that the five members of the U.S. National Security or the UN National Security Council are the five largest arms traffickers in the world.
Wow!
So U.S. is number one, Russia is number two.
Yeah, but what's the gap between one and two?
Big. It's huge. Right. It's huge.
I think there's a gap between one and everyone else.
Well, but here's part of the problem. You know, if we're going to lose reserve currency status, that's one of our few businesses where we earn foreign dollars, right?
Right. Yeah.
So what do we export? Arms.
Good question.
Right.
Yeah. Good question.
So,
okay.
So we point out the relationship with Zelensky, and we saw the Syrian leader discussing who Zelensky was. So are you going to show us a little bit about who Zelensky really is?
Yeah, let's take a look. This clip is called Gay Comedian Cast in Role of Ukrainian President. Oh, wait. That's the title of it. And I'm just going to roll this clip. I've got the volume muted again. It's just kind of a musical clip. But it shows Zelensky in the role.
Before he became president.
Yeah, before he became president. This is what we're dealing with. This is the leader of Ukraine. Okay, here we go. So there you go. That's the head of Ukraine, Zelensky, right in a clip. High heels, tight leather pants, the works. Right.
I don't know what to say.
I know what to say. I'm uncomfortable with him as head of Ukraine. And we want them in NATO?
Huh. Right.
That's what you want in NATO. Good to know. Thanks for tipping your hand.
Right. No.
Okay.
I wanted to show this because if you look at how out of control if you look at where the neocons and the Shriekometer have taken us, they have taken us to a place where, you know, the way they're running things is a joke.
Yeah.
And it's a way of making fun of us.
Yes. Right.
You know, we the neocons and the Shriekometer can get you to pretend that Zelensky is the head of the of the Ukraine. Obviously, he's not running the Ukraine. I mean, come on. It was very interesting. I can't tell you how many, I had a few investigative reporters who were very good and very serious send me when Zelensky apparently met with the European leaders, they sent me lots of documentation and proof saying Zelensky's not even in the Ukraine, he's in Poland. And the meeting was in Poland. It wasn't in Kiev. I mean, why would European leaders go to a city that's being bombed?
Right.
You know, they wouldn't.
Right.
The whole thing, you know, it's just like the energy story. The whole thing makes absolutely no sense.
Right. And speaking of pretend, the next story, the next clip I'm going to show you, and the diluting the brand.
This says it all.
This is, okay, this is not a news clip. It's a shot from a camera of a news clip before the news clip is being shot. So it's like, you know, someone on the set of the production. So let's just watch the clip to see what people are going to receive as their news. Okay, here we go. And again, I've cut the volume because it's just a musical. There's really no language anyway, but here's the clip. Here you go. It's called Smoking Corpse. Zooming in on the corpses here that are going to be shown on the news. This guy's got to have a cigarette. So that's what's being sold to you as a corpse on the news. Look, a stack of corpses. And, you know, it's just a guy there. It's just a bunch of dummies.
Right.
Plus one guy smoking a cigarette.
Right. I'm assuming everybody watching this has seen the movie Wag the Dog, but if you haven't, it's time. You need to see it.
Yeah. You know what? I haven't seen that. I got to watch it.
Oh, you're kidding. You've never seen Wag? It's hysterical. You have to see it. And,
okay.
And it tells you what's going on.
Okay. I've been meaning to watch it for 20 years, but.
Anyway. You know, God love Hollywood. They always tell you what they're up to.
They do. They do.
They really do.
Signal what they're doing.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
Okay. You ready for charts?
I'm ready for charts. So I wanted to keep it simple this year, this week.
Here we go.
So I wanted to show the FinViz chart. This is from a great website called FinViz. And I wanted to show the 1 year performance. Is this 3 year relative performance?
It's 1 year.
One year.
Yep.
So I wanted to show 1 year and then year to date. So this is, we're looking at the 1 year now, and obviously you've got the oil and gas in the top.
So let me, I'll just point out a couple. Heating oil is up 108.57%. Lumber, which we like to look at, 20.07%. And the VIX up 14.58%. That's the 1 year.
So this is very important because it's the first time in years we've seen the VIX in the positive territory. And what this says is we're back in a world where there's real risk. The Fed put isn't going to protect you from everything.
Yeah.
So we're in a real risk world now.
So now, having seen that, let's go to the year-to-date FinViz. Right? Here we go. And I'll just put the same ones back up. Here we have heating oil up 64.08%. So it's 44.49% less than it was on the 1 year. You have lumber down, you know, 2.69%, so that's 22.76% less. And then the VIX is way up on year to date.
Right. So what this says to me, is investors are in shock.
Yes.
Because the Fed put is gone and they're living with real risk.
Right. The VIX
is
the only.
That's a very new world for them.
Right. That year to date is a different story, at least insofar as the VIX is concerned.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Keep it going.
Okay. So I just wanted to take a look at interest rates. So this is the 30-year. We're going to look at the 30-year and the 10-year. And as you can see, the percentages looks large because it's coming from a low base. But interest rates are up both in the intermediate and long end, you know, 70 to 80 basis points. Now, the reason, and this is year to date. So the reason I bring this up, John, is traditionally, the stock market can take a 150 basis point rise in interest rates and digest it without it having a meaningful swing in the stock market. If you go more than 150 basis points, you're going to see traditionally a big impact in the equity markets. And you may get an impact in precious metals. You're certainly going to get an impact in the real estate industry. So go show the next one. Let's take a look at the intermediate.
Yeah, it's almost indistinguishable.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, so.
I mean, look, there's the previous one, and now you're, that's TYX. This is TN. These look the same.
This is the 10-year. Yeah.
Yeah.
So cost of money is definitely going up. There's no doubt about that. And I've said that if you, you know, you've now gotten sovereign governments all over the world highly leveraged up. If the interest rates climb, you know, you're ready. You're looking at radical reengineering of a lot of sovereign governments, particularly the United States.
Particularly the U.S.
Right.
Okay. Let's keep it going. And this is the 5-year DYX.
So this dollar. Is the U.S. dollar index. And as you can see, because of, you know, sort of what's happening with the currency wars, the U.S. dollar is strong. And so U.S. dollar climbing back up, it had really dropped down last year. So in the short term, dollar strong. Long run, you know, what will happen to the dollar? I think a lot of it comes down to the military questions that are covert. So how much military strength and weaponry is behind the dollar? We'll see.
Yeah, I'll tell you that the this period here, early 2018,
right.
This is when the Fed started raising rates back then. And then it gets to here, about September. And that's when the repo trouble started. And so here right. we are here, and the Fed's saying, hey, we're going to raise rates again. So good luck with that.
Right.
Yeah. So that's it for charts.
Well, just you say they can't do it, but they can do it if they're going to radically reengineer the governance structure.
Yeah. Yeah, listen, you know, when I say they can't do it, okay, they could do quarter points, little, you know, mamby-pamby, headline-grabbing sort of interest rates, but you're going to try to curb 20, 30, 40% inflation by raising the interest rate by quarter of a point? You know, you're just doing that for PR. That's not a real raise. Yeah.
Well, here's the question. Do you go to radical reengineering of the debt and the government structure, or do you have a war?
The $64 trillion question.
Right.
Yep.
Right. So war could happen.
It's happening.
Right.
Yeah. Right. I mean, the live to fight another day, it's a war in everything except, you know, boots on the ground and bullets so far.
Right. I don't know. It's I would say it's a time to really focus on building your local resiliency. And there is a lot you can do politically to make sure that we do those things to protect the Constitution and the basics. We just put up this week a link to our taxation PDF. It's the next wrap-up. It's gone to the printer. And so taxation is up on the – will go up on the homepage this week.
Oh, great.
And speaking of which, we continue to get a steady – flow of people switching to cash and coin. So take a look.
Really?
We still have an offer, 3 extra months if you switch to cash and coin. So take advantage of it. We now have 25% of our subscribers paying by bank check or ACH or cash.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's
it's
great.
It's great. It's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. And PayPal stock is down 70%.
Well, you know, makes me happy.
But I still haven't figured out what that's about. And a couple of other things that went up on the web. I did, Carl von Wolferen is a wonderful journalist in the Netherlands, and I sort of road tripped a week ago to see him and do an interview on the Ukraine. That's up in special reports. I also did a very interesting discussion with one of the MPs from Kuwait, who's head of the Human Rights Committee, who wanted to talk about, okay, how are we going to network globally? The people who want freedom, how are we going to network globally? And then tomorrow, we hope to have up in the Soleri in the news your new video, which I'm looking forward to. I know you're editing it now. It's going to be up soon. It's going to be at Best Evidence on YouTube. And you're the only reason I ever send anybody to YouTube.
Good enough. We'll see after this video how much longer I remain on YouTube. Some of my remarks to Powell are quite pointed. Yeah.
Well, here's the funny situation. You know, it's I told you about this paper of Lugano, but you know, it wouldn't surprise me if there are more and more guys on Wall Street and and Powell looking at where this is all going. I mean, I can't tell you. I used to work with Powell. Yeah. You know, I'm sure when Powell first saw that video of Zelensky in the leather pants, you know what that does to a guy like Powell?
He's got to make his skin crawl.
Anyway, it's I think the people who were trying to keep the Band-Aids working and together have got to feel. All I can tell you is I'm glad you and I are doing what we're doing and we're not in their shoes.
Yeah, yeah. I mentioned money and markets for the first time in a video, this last video I've done, because you know you told me about the world reserve currency, the overlap, you know, between mm-hmm. the pound and I didn't know that. Anyway, but the video is worth watching. It'll probably clock in at about 48 minutes, give or take. Uh-huh. So it's like, you know, another long kind of sloggy video, but I've got a clip of Powell in there. You absolutely have to see when he's talking about the world reserve currency, and we'll talk later after you see it, because he does this little head nod as he's talking, and I'm convinced that that's like muscle memory, him trying to remember his lines. And I talk about that in the video. It's really interesting, yeah.
Well, from what you said about it, he's basically telling people, you know, don't bet on the reserve currency status forever.
That's what he's saying. He comes right out and says it. My take on that is he has to be really careful about how he phrases that. And that's why he's got to remember his lines.
Right. But what kind of world is it where the Secretary of the Treasury is basically kissing up to some guy who's proposing to strip the human race of their assets and move to a communist system?
Oh, you mean the Secretary of the Treasury, who used to be the head of the Federal Reserve and the head of the Federal Reserve Bank of San Francisco.
Right. And now the Federal Reserve is talking, the Federal Reserve Chairman is talking in testimony about, you know, ending the reserve currency status. It's kind of like, you know, we really are in La La Land.
We are, but we're also in a land where the mask is coming off of who is running this country.
Right.
And who is running this country are the owners of the Federal Reserve. And I'm here to tell you, they don't care where the world's currency is located. They're going to get theirs either way.
Right.
If it's in the U.S., that's fine.
As long as they control it, it's fine.
Exactly. As long as you're borrowing your money into existence, we don't care. And when it comes time to flush you down the toilet, we'll damn sure do it.
Right. Yep. Right. Well, okay. So, on that cheerful note, John.
On that happy note.
No money in markets next week. It's the last week of the month. So I'll be back with you in 2 weeks. And, you know, I'm going to look for some good news.
Okay. I'll do the same. That's 2 weeks. We'll search for a fortnight for good news. Let's do it.
Have a great time. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, Catherine. See ya.